Hi, I'm Ruthie, and I have a recorder. Tune in Wednesdays from 4 to 5 to Out There. We'll meet people and plants around the streets and paths of Northampton, and we'll think about ways we can share the world. Here on Valley Free Radio, or archived online at weatherbeer.com/out there. Get out if you can, but if you can't get out, tune in. We don't care if they laugh at us. Let them take the bus and need a sickle for us. They can have a Cadillac and T-1-2, but give me my rocket bicycle for two. And that's today. Thanks for tuning in. I'm in the studio here with all the equipment. Dwayne's not here today, but I have a recording from him from yesterday talking about adopting part of the rail trail and mowing the grass. So today is Wednesday, June 29th. And for today's show, well, I was walking around town yesterday, going to the Tuesday Farmers Market with my recorder looking for something. So I talked to Dwayne. And then there were also some people, they were demonstrating a solar grill. So I got an interview from that. Also, I have a short interview with some other people from Surge. Some of us, like four of us, went door knocking on Sunday. Surge showing up for racial justice. We knocked on neighbors' doors in Northampton just talking about racism and trying to keep it on people's minds, especially as white people, whatever white means, to keep speaking out about that. And then also have some clips from Race Amity Day, which was celebrated in Amherst the second Sunday of June. And that's probably most of it. A few songs here and there. I'll start out with talking with Dwayne about Adopt a Trail.
So one of the parts
sitting here with little boy Dwayne Rainey.
They'll say the parking garage.
Garage.
So one of the things I like about Northampton, one of the places I frequent, is the rail trail. Many parts of it. The part from Taco Bell down to Pleasant Street that goes along the railroad tracks. And I remember a couple years ago, remember trying to pass through there a couple years ago? There'd be goldenrod and vines and everything just like hanging over into it.
Oh, yeah, it's terrible. One lane only.
But now, it's kind of like when you clean up and no one, you don't notice. You never notice when something's clean, you only notice when it's dirty. Anyway, so whenever I bike that stretch of rail trail from Taco Bell down to Main Street, I admire the grass cutting job and the vine cutting job alongside of it. And you know who does that?
Me.
That's right. Dwayne Rainey. Adopt a trail adopter Dwayne Rainey.
Adopt a trail adopter.
Anyway, so Dwayne, what do you do how do you help maintain that path? Help. You do it all.
Well, I really enjoy the paths that we have, the bike paths that we have in around Northampton, and there's a couple of sections that were like needed to be adapted, so I figured I ride the trail every single day, so I might as well do something positive to take and make the trail look really nice. We have a lot of people that come in on weekends and ride with their children, and so I think it's really nice to have a nice, clean, well-mowed trail, not like a lot of bushes hanging over into the bike path, or when it gets rained on, tree limbs coming down, you gotta go through them to get wet and to get to the other side. So I mow every couple of weeks, and I constantly like trim along the rail trail fence. So I do that from the North Street Bridge down into Taco Bell. A friend of mine, Jack, who's him and his wife own A to Z, he mows from the Main Street Bridge to the North Street Bridge. When I was getting ready to do this, I knew I couldn't do it with a push mower because We tried. I was like, this ain't going to work. Gonna do it with a push. And so Jack offered to take and let me use his lawnmower, and that's worked out pretty well.
How much time every other week do you spend working on this trail?
Well, I've only mowed it like once this past month because we haven't got any rain and the grass doesn't really grow. So I spent more time cutting along the fence because it seems like the bittersweet and the sumac and things like that, they don't take a break. They don't care if it's raining or not. As far as the grass, I say I've done it once in the past month. That was like late last week. I'm waiting for the rain. But if it's like raining or something like that, I'll do it like every 2 weeks. And so I try and do it like on a Friday. So then Saturday and Sunday when all the families and stuff come down, I can just like admire the path. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I'm just thinking about today, because trimming, when I'm riding down, I see something that needs to be trimmed. I have my clippers, and I'll just spend like maybe 15, 20 minutes a couple times a week just trimming back some of the stuff. And I'm going to be putting in the bike tunnel right down at the end of my section. You know, my time and keeping it up is just doing my part for our bike paths.
Well, thank you. I'm very appreciative. Not only do I get to see the bike path looking nice, but I get to see you out there sweating when I bike through every now and then.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. A lot of people, I mean, they're coming down. They may not say too much when I'm, like, mowing, because lately it's just, like, a lot of dust or...
All I do is cough when I go by.
What are you doing? People in general are pretty appreciative. They'll mm-hmm. see you doing something. I had a couple guys that they were walking down the bike path, and they walked by me a few weeks back, and I was trimming some of the branches to keep them off the bike path, and they come walking back, and this guy says, is this something like you have to do, or is this something that you just do by yourself because you want to? Or so I had to say, you know, this is adopt a trail, and this is my section of the trail, so I like to keep it up nice. And so far, so good.
What do you do about the trash?
Well, I put a couple trash bags up along that stretch, hoping that like people coming out of Liquors 44 or whatever, and when they do their nips, instead of throwing them in the grass, I'll put them in the trash bag.
Yeah, I saw you tied them to the fence.
Yeah.
It looks like people have been throwing their nip bottles underneath the bags, at least, consolidating them.
You're getting close. That way, if I just hit them, I just hold patch it once, and that's okay. Mostly, I think that people, if they see the trash bags,
yeah,
and they see something on the bike path, they're more apt to pick it up and put it in there.
Yeah, you know, I think I like the trash bags tied to the fence thing, because it's enough. It's a place for people to put the litter they've picked up, but it's not so inviting for illegal dumping as an actual trash can would be.
I mean, there's still going to be a little trash. People that, like, I'm done with this nip, and I'm going to throw it where I want. And mm-hmm. if you don't like it, tough.
Do you ever get grumpy about the trash people throw down or the grass that keeps growing, like, every single day, every week? You got to go back and cut the darn stuff again?
No. I mean, it just takes me an hour, maybe hour and a half to take and mow. Many people, that's the main reason I do it, so everyone can like enjoy, except that dog. Everybody can enjoy the past in Northampton and that they're well maintained.
That was an interview with Dwayne Rainey talking about his Adopt the Trail stretch of the Northampton Rail Trail, along King Street, between King Street and the railroad tracks. Tell him thanks if you ride through and see him. Well, shoot, tell him thanks if you don't see him. And all the other rail trail adoptees who work to pick up trash and mow. Most of the path, like the stretch from Stop and Shop to Leeds, the city maintains it. But the newer stretch along the railroad tracks, that's all just mowed by volunteers and trimmed by volunteers. If you feel like trimming anything back between there and, shoot, I think East Hampton, more Adopt-a-Trail volunteers are always needed. And feel free to pick up trash anytime you see it, too. Speaking of Dwayne, he's actually working on getting a show on Valley Free Radio 2. He's going to do a 70s music show. And so hopefully you'll hear from him and his sense of humor for his whole show. If you just tuned in, this is Out There on Valley Free Radio. And next I'm going to play an interview with some people who were at yesterday's Tuesday Market behind Thorns in Northampton. people that had a solar grill.
Absolutely. And we'll boil a small pot of water in about 2 to 3 minutes, about as fast as a microwave.
They are the most lightweight and indestructible design I've ever seen. And it was made for nomads in Tibet. And it's built to be easily taken apart and thrown on the back of a yak and moved to the next village. And it keeps people from having to, you know, forage for wood every time they go to a new place. And, you know, yeah, Tibetan plateau isn't really full of forests. So yeah. The main thing is the health issue as well as the climate issue, because women and children die by the millions every year from smoke inhalation.
Could have had more
pneumonia, bronchitis, all kinds of things like that. For some cooking over smoky fires. It's amazing the overlap between places in the world where people are energy poor and need something to cook tea or dinner every day, and the amount of sun that these places get. You know, a lot of Africa, a lot of Southern Asia, unbelievable sun all the time. So it just makes so much sense. So these, they retail these, like they're manufactured in these tiny factories in China and assembled and trucked up the plateau into Tibet by their team. And, you know, they're not charging those people $4.99. You know, this is like the half of the impetus is, you know, sales in Germany and the U.S. and all that kind of.
Can you tell me about this? Sun oven, whatever. What do you call this? Sun forever. What is this?
We call it a solar grill.
A solar grill.
Yes.
Okay.
So you can grill whatever, actually. So it's a grill or a stove. So you can use whatever cookware you want on it. Uh-huh. So here you can boil water once the sun is out, and here you can even grill a 1 pound steak. We've done. So we can get a lot of power out of this.
Okay. Can you describe it, like? For a listener, how would you describe this?
So, a lot of people are wondering, it looks like something taken out of Star Wars. It's a reflective parabola, and then it's filled with a reflective material, and it's the reflective material that is sort of the main secret of our product, the secret sauce.
So it's kind of about the size of a golf umbrella, like it's like a large umbrella turned up towards the sky.
Yeah.
Reflective,
reflective material. And then and then you can, in the middle of the parabola, that's where all the sunlight gets focused. And then you can cook with just the power of the sun there. So that's where you put your cookware. So it's safe to touch, and you can get temperatures over 550 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oh, that's cool.
So these never get hot themselves. Wow. They're reflective material.
Interesting. But you probably don't want to put your hand here while you're not paying attention in the middle.
No. So in the center there, it's you can get over 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit. So what we say is that you only take your hand there once, and you would never do it again because you would burn yourself.
Well, how do you remove the stuff? You need tongs, or what if you got a pot there?
No, so when you have a pot like this, you can take it away, and that's totally safe. And just underneath, it's safe to touch.
Uh-huh.
But it's just in the focal points, so it's quite concentrated, and that's a protected area. So it's no danger in that way.
Huh. Yeah. So I have a sun oven that I use in my household. We use it all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm just sort of comparing and contrasting.
Yeah.
So this gets hotter, but then like one of the things with a sun oven is you can't burn anything.
Mm.
How do you maintain an even heat in your pot or your meat or whatever you're cooking, whatever you're grilling?
So what we say is that you can cook most of your meals in 10 to 20 minutes. So this is a proper stovetop. It's like your indoor stove.
With a sun oven, you go away and forget about it. So that's why you don't burn it. But here it's like you pay attention so you don't burn it.
Yes.
It sounds like.
So it's more like your grill and barbecue, your charcoal and gas there.
That's really quick. That makes sense in terms of what the other guy was saying about, you know, if you're traveling, you keep it on your, put it on your yak or whoever you're traveling. I don't know, whatever you're traveling with, and then once you get to your site, you can set it up and cook. Whereas the sun oven, you gotta have a domesticated, stable kind of cooking situation.
So this is by far the most efficient and powerful solar cooker on the market. But it's all about, it's like your indoor kitchen. You have a microwave, you have a stovetop, and you have an oven. Uh-huh. So and you use it for different applications. So this is a stovetop and a grill, and an oven is more for baking and longer time and lower temperatures.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So it's a variation. Which is great.
What's the name of it?
This is Soul Source. It's the name of the product. So it's Soul Source Solar Grill. Uh-huh. And the company is called One Earth Designs. Uh-huh. So,
And what's your name and what's your connection to that?
Okay, yeah. My name is Evan Larsen from Norway. And I'm the co-founder. And I'm in charge of sales and marketing globally for this.
So are you doing a tour of the United States? Or what?
Yeah. So we've been here 2.5 months already. And we have 2 more weeks before we have to go back to Europe.
Uh-huh. Where all have you been? What kind of events have you gone to?
Yeah, we started off at Earth Day in Texas, uh-huh. the largest Earth Day in the world, actually, there in Dallas. And then we went on to Arizona. We had some events there, and California and Oregon. We went to the Mother Earth News Fair mm-hmm. in Oregon. And just meeting customers as well, meeting the people that have bought our product. We're sitting in Europe and wondering who are these people in the U.S. Okay. Uh-huh. that have bought this. So. Meeting them and saying how is this working in their daily lives. It's uh-huh. been so much learning the last couple of months.
That's cool. Who tends to be your customers?
So we have like a wide range of people, but most of them are those who want to lower their carbon footprint, want to live more self-reliant with nature and so mm-hmm. on, off-grid we have some. But a lot of people also take this for camping. Uh-huh. And that's great. And then we have families that have that host solar barbecues in their backyard. So you're by far the coolest dad if you have a solar barbecue and not a coal or gas barbecue. Uh-huh.
So these different pieces, how small, what kind of package does it break down into?
Yeah, so the whole thing weighs, the whole solar grill weighs 40 pounds. So it's quite lightweight.
And then 40,
yeah. And the mirrors are detachable and stackable, so you can fold it together. And also the framework, you have some clips uh-huh. that you can easily clip it off and bring it along with you. Mm-hmm. So you don't need to buy any fuel or take with you any propane mm-hmm. or charcoal again.
Mm-hmm. So how much does it sell for, and where does that money go?
Yeah, so we retail for $4.99 on our website. That's where we mostly sell. And sort of the profits goes to product development and new productions and marketing and sales. But we also have a non-profit where we have projects both in the Himalayas, where we started off, in Kenya, Haiti, and so on. So our model is that our European and American sales drives our product in the emerging markets. So we have a dual hybrid business model there.
How did you get into this?
One thing is, I always wanted to make my own company, and I wanted to make a company that does something positive as well. So not only is this positive for the climate, but it's also positive for people and health around the world. And then we had some research at our university in Norway, there's some research at MIT and Harvard, and then all of this is sort of put together and then made a product out of it. And then we've now made a company around it. So this is my full-time job.
I'm curious, with these reflective panels, when they stack, what keeps them from scratching and getting dulled?
Yeah. So and that's where the secret is. It's in the material itself. It's so lightweight. Uh-huh. And we've actually tested it to withstand 6 years in sandstorm without a decrease in efficiency. So it's actually, it's scratch resistant. So even though you get some scratches, it doesn't affect the efficiency at all. So and that's so important, because we made this for the nomads in the Himalayas. You need the durability, because to assemble and disassemble and bring it along.
Very cool. I imagine if one of a, you know, if one of the pieces did get cracked, you can just get a replacement.
Yeah, and they don't crack. It's not glass. It's a polymer doped in aluminum. Mm-hmm. So high efficiency, and it won't break. And if something happens, we have of course spare parts that we can get.
Are there any other questions that people always ask you that I haven't asked?
So they are wondering, like, how can you adjust the temperature, because this is so powerful. So we have you can horizontally and vertically adjust it to the sun. Uh-huh. like this. So both horizontally and vertically. You can follow the sun from sunrise to sunset. And then you can adjust the temperature by like getting a bit out of focus and a bit in focus.
Uh-huh. How sunny or cloudy of conditions could you like boil some water under?
Yeah, as long as you can see your own shade, you're good to go, or your shadow. So, but the more sun, the bluer sky, the more efficient and faster it goes.
Yeah. Cool.
But you usually you cook outside when it's a good weather and sunny weather anyway. So yeah.
One of the dangers of the sun oven that I have is that when I put pots in or take them out, it's hard to not blind myself. But I haven't. The sun's not really bright right now, but I haven't felt like I'm at risk of blinding myself with this thing.
So that's also why we have designed it like we have. So everything, if you're standing on this side, it's totally safe. It's because all the sun is reflecting away from you.
Yeah, you have to put your head like where the pot is to get blinded.
Yeah.
You probably burn your eyeballs.
Yeah, so you wouldn't do that.
Cool, anything else you want to add?
No, I think that's the main thing, and we want to show people that it is possible to cook with just the sun. And
to cook quick.
And quick, quickly. Yes. Yeah. In just 10 to 20 minutes, you're good to go. So yeah, it's so fun as well.
Yeah.
It's fun to feel that you can use the power of the sun. It's free, it's powerful, and why not use it more in your daily life?
So I'm Eric from Co-op Power. And we are showing solar stoves at the farmers market. It's one of the members' benefits of being part of Co-op Power is getting a big discount on really cool solar cooking devices for your home. Our members are always talking about trying to get their lives off of fossil fuels, whether that's solar or biodiesel or what have you, and cooking is a big part of that. So we're just here showing people how cool these stoves look, how durable they are, how portable they can be, and how relevant they are to, you know, life in the valley. Local food, local energy, you know, it's all... That's why we love being here at the market. It's really makes it really clear. If it was sunnier today, we were planning to be roasting carrots and sausages or whatever, you know.
So that was Eric and Evan Larson, co-founder of Soul Source Solar Grill. That's Evan. At the Tuesday Farmers Market. And I'm going to take a little break. No, I'm going to play this little clip about the Design Collective, a shared workspace downtown.
What is the name of this space?
This is the Design Collective.
Where is it? What's the address?
So we're at the mezzanine level of the APE Gallery, which is, I believe, 126 Main Street in Northampton. And we're walking in the door.
There's a bunch of people working in there. Maybe you can tell me outside.
Okay. So this is a co-working space.
I love it.
So there's a bunch of different people who share the space. We have, you can either get your own desk or you can share a desk. I share a desk. And it's really awesome.
Internet,
bathroom,
water,
friends to hang out with.
A little bit of storage space.
Yeah, storage space.
What do you use the storage space for?
So I own a catering company, Beets and Barley, and I have a stand at the farmer's market. And I keep my big items that I need for the farmer's market, like my tent and my table, up here in the office so I don't have to carry them back to Haydenville every week.
Nice. Can you say how much it costs?
So I pay $40 a month for my half desk.
Cool. Thanks.
You're welcome.
That was Molly Merritt. I met her walking back from the farmer's market yesterday. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio, WXOJ 103.3 FM in Northampton. I'm Ruthie Woodring, and we're going to take a little break and bikes. Love bikes.
It makes me feel free.
I do it to save money.
I feel in charge when I'm doing it.
It's a healthy way of life.
Why do you bicycle instead of driving a car?
It's a good way to fit more exercise into my day.
Bicycling is a fun, healthy, economical, and fuel-efficient way to travel. Enjoy the ride. Take your bike. Brought to you by the Franklin Regional Council of Governments and Pioneer Valley Planning Commission, with funding provided by the Federal Highway Administration and Massachusetts Executive Office of Transportation. Come visit enjoytherideby-bike.com.
So good, why did you throw it away?
You want to learn to fix your bike? How to keep it tuned up so it's there for you when you need it? Or maybe you know already, but you just need to borrow a bike-specific tool that you don't have. Well, come to the Bike Lab.
Almost every Saturday since 2004, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., here in Northampton at 12 Northern Avenue.
Come with your bike or your questions.
And your willing attitude.
Spare parts scavenger hunt every weekend.
Venga para el Bike Lab de Northampton y se divertirá mucho, le enseñará muchas lecciones como arreglar bicicletas.
All repairs guaranteed to the end of the driveway.
Details are online at pedalpeople.coop. That's the Saturday Bike Lab at 12 Northern Avenue.
11 a.m. to 2 p.m.
They say freedom isn't free, but at the Bike Lab it is.
Ya súbase a la bici, compa. Trépese a la de montaña, la bici urbana, la bici cross. Lléguele a la bicicleta. Ya de menos a la eléctrica o a la estática, ya no hay tos. Llegaré pedaleando en el viaje de allá para acá.
So this next little thing I'm going to play is Evelyn Perry from a show called Spin. And the song is She Rides.
Spin me like I've already spoken, like a spoke holds its tension. Like it's together that the spokes are the invention of a wheel, that a wheel is only as round as its tension, that a wheel is a round invention. She gets on her bicycle, she gets on her bicycle, she gets on her bicycle, she rides. She gets on her bicycle, she gets on her bicycle, she gets on her bicycle, she rides. She rides. Fragile as bodies soaring through the city on two wheels, cycles through the traffic and the people steering clear of the potholes and the car doors and the streetcar tracks. Tuned into my own personal soundtrack. I'm singing out loud as I pedal through the streets, spinning to the rhythm of 4.5 million heartbeats. And I tend to miss my turnoffs when I'm tuned into my turn-ons. I tend to write sentences that turn into run-ons. I tend to recycle the same thoughts that cycle round. The way I recycle the same stretch of the ground on my two-wheel bicycle that gets me around. She gets on her bicycle, she gets on her bicycle, she gets on her bicycle, she rides. She rides. I get this feeling on my two-wheel steed as I pick up speed. It feeds something free, this desire for autonomy, moving outside the dominant economy. Two wheels, not four. No gas, no oil, no war for this machine. All I need is air. Two pedals, a crank and a chain, two wheels and a frame. A revolution that keeps me arriving again and again. She gets on her bicycle, she gets on.
She rides. She gets on her bicycle. She gets on her bicycle. She gets on her bicycle.
That was Evelyn Perry with a song she rides from a show called Spin. And a couple of announcements to see. Coming up this Saturday, July 2nd, local environmental groups, 2 Degrees at Green Neighbors Earth. Oh, I'm not sure if I read that quite right. Pioneer Valley Mothers Out Front and Climate Action Now will participate in the Pachamama Puppets and the Puppets in the World Children's Theater Company in a street theater event called The World We Love, a celebration of interdependence. So this is this Saturday in front of First Churches at 1 o'clock. Parades of giant puppets and people of all ages will come from four directions and converge at First Churches at 129 Main Street. There'll be puppets, children, actors, musicians, and activists who will participate in a play created by local children. A dragon will appear, and everyone will have a chance to help transform it. There'll be music with the Expandable Brass Band, Stephen Katz, David Reutman, and Sarah Pirtle. From that gathering, groups will leave to place flags and signs at many of the town's 91 natural gas leaks to inform the community about the threat to people, trees, and climate posed by methane escaping from old, corroded natural gas pipes. The cost of leaked gas in Massachusetts is estimated at $122 million per year. To get involved in the event, please call Beth Fair Service at 413-387-9330, 387-9330. Or you could just show up this Saturday at 1 in front of First Churches, Interdependence Day. What else we got? You know, I'm going to play this clip from Serge door knocking a few days ago with some friends.
So one of the working groups of Serge is door knocking with someone here. I'm here with... Introduce yourselves, please.
Kat, Samora,
and Carol.
And we've been out door knocking today. Can one of you explain, like, what is door knocking like? Why is door knocking important? And those are two different questions, but anybody want to take it?
Sure. I'll take it. So door knocking is about having conversations to break white silence around racism and getting people to think about where they're coming from and how they participate in racism and racist systems. And it's also about building relationships between folks so that we can have more accountability and be more united and organized in resisting racism and working towards racial justice.
So what might a typical conversation be like? Or just walk me through what happens when you go up to some random person's door and you ring their buzzer?
Well, you never know what's going to happen. But it's a lot less scary than it sounds. And anything can happen. People are coming from so many different places. When we talked to folks today, a lot of people were reflecting on sort of these different layers of racism and how there's interpersonal racism and structural racism and how it impacts their... what they see in the world and how it impacts their jobs. One person was reflecting about teaching and wanting to incorporate more representation in her classroom materials of, you know, folks of color and history, like non-white centered histories and things like that. So she was talking about trying to incorporate more of that into her work with kids. And that's something that I've heard on other days too, people talking about how racism shows up in their jobs. Another person a few weeks ago was talking about teaching ESL and how she hadn't understood really at first that many of her students were deeply impacted by racism until she started to notice that her job went from being, like, she was sort of becoming an ad hoc advocate where she noticed her students of color were getting more parking tickets, getting pulled over more often, and she would end up, you know, going to court with people and helping advocate for them. And she started noticing, like, this was only happening to, you know, English language learners, and why was that? And so she started to understand racism in a new way that she hadn't seen before. Like, she didn't start her job to do that work. She just ended up doing that work. And, like, learning about racism that way from the experiences of her non-white students and how different their lives looked than hers, in terms of the different, like, ways that they were being, like, criminalized and targeted, basically. So, yeah, I guess those are some conversations that I've had at people's doors. People have been receptive. Sometimes people are really busy and don't want to talk, and that's totally fine. What else happens?
Or, like, when you knock on their door and they come, how do you get the conversation going? What do you start with?
It depends, but I usually start with something like, I'm here because I'm concerned about this. I think we need to be concerned about this, and I wonder if you are too and what you're thinking. Because I would like to hear, I think that it's very important to have some kind of a, really hear what people are saying. It seems to me even more important than whatever I'm saying. And then from there, you know, who knows what is going to happen next, but...
What do you say when people say, well, I don't see racism in Northampton?
You'd say, yeah, it's hard to see because Northampton's so white. However, well, the two things that I said today to different people were, I bet if you asked people of color who have kids in school, you would hear a different story. And I know of people of color who felt like they were profiled by police, pulled over more than, pulled over when there was no reason, at least, for it. So those are two things that I, who have certainly not experienced as a white woman, I haven't experienced racism directly here, obviously. But those are some of the things that I have said.
Or maybe you haven't experienced that side of racism, but I'm sure that...
Exactly. Yes, thank you for the correction.
Yeah, we also talked about racism as being systemic as well as interpersonal. And so even in thinking about who you see in Northampton and who you don't see really speaks to segregation and access and who has resources and who's able to be in certain spaces and feel safe in certain spaces and access resource in certain spaces. So...
Anything
else? Also, asking questions can help. Like, I might just ask that person, why don't you think you see racism in Northampton? To get a little bit more about why they think that might reveal something.
Cool. Anything else anyone wants to add?
Or this question, I think, was your question first, was, well, why is it that Northampton is all so white? Why is that?
Great question, Ruthie.
Anyone want to tackle that one? Or
anything else to add?
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for asking, Ruthie.
Thanks for asking. And you can find out more about showing up for racial justice online. You can find us on Facebook at Western Mass Surge.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. That was a debriefing interview with a handful of a few of us that went out door knocking on Sunday as part of Surge. And next, Carol was talking about how racism may be more obvious to people of color who have children in the school system. And that just reminded me of this good video that was recently made. I think it's somewhere on the NCTV website, I believe. But it was made by the Students of Color Alliance at JFK Middle School in Northampton, I think with support from Henry White, who does Spotlighting Paradise. I was trying to look for it earlier online so I could give a link, but I couldn't find the link. But they asked some of the youth, like, what is racism and how do you experience it? And so you can see and hear students from JFK answering that question. So next I'm going to play some clips from the Race Amity Day in Amherst. The second Sunday of June is Race Amity Day. It just became a nationally recognized day.
Salam alaikum. In other words, in all cultures, in all peoples of the earth, have ways of greeting people, making them feel good. This is our our celebration of our diversity and our unity. Today we're celebrating Race Amity Day in Amherst, and also in the state of Massachusetts, the day is being celebrated. And as breaking news, yes, and as breaking news, it'll be celebrated throughout the nation. And Ellen Story is going to say something about that a bit later. It's really breaking news. It's a day to raise our collective consciousness about the oneness of the human family. On this day of worship, when people go to pray and to church, one of the realities of our country is that, in fact, we are still highly segregated, even as we worship. And we want to celebrate here today the coming together, the diversity that we want to honor. We want to actually reflect the fundamental founding principle of our country, a pluribus unum. A pluribus unum. How many are Latin scholars here? That just means out of many, one. And that principle, although it has been articulated from the beginning of our nation's founding, has not been actually played out in our actions and our institutions. Nelson Mandela once made the observation that what the world really needs is for each of us, each individual, to widen that circle of family and friends. If we each did that throughout the world, we would get to the place which the world needs us to get to. And that moves beyond the socially constructed fiction of race. We recognize that race is simply a fiction. It's a very powerful fiction, and it gets reflected in our institutions and in the injustices in our society. And yet it is a fiction. It's based on a falsehood. And racism itself is simply an emotional attachment to that falsehood. We want to celebrate today our slow but definite steps towards the unity, the friendship, the amity that this day stands for. We want to open with prayer because we recognize the fundamental principle and the reality of the oneness of humankind is both a biological and a spiritual principle.
Yes, indeed.
It's not just a social thing. It really has to do with our spiritual, our emotional and spiritual essence and the degree to which we feel attracted to the variety and the wonder of our diversity. And we're going to call on prayers from Naomi and then Shabazz, Amilcar, and then Juan.
Oh God, we thank you for the fact that you have inspired men and women in all nations and in all cultures. We call you different names. Some call you Allah, some call you Elohim, some call you Jehovah, some call you Brahma. Some call you the unmoved mover. But we know that these are all names for one and the same God. Grant that we will follow you and become so committed to your way and your kingdom that we will be able to establish in our lives and in this world a brother and sisterhood, where men and women live together and respect the dignity and worth of every human being. Amen. Martin Luther King.
With that, I want to turn over to Ray Elliott, who is really a champion, one of the historical greats, to give us some words about the experience of founding the Citizens for Race Amity and this Race Amity Day. So, Ray?
Here's the mic. You know, when Dr. William Smith was starting the National Center for Race Amity, his buddies told him, they're gonna chase you out of town, boy, talking about amity in this caustic climate that exists. This was back in 2010, and that's when he started. established the National Center for Race Amity. And he says, they said, why did you use amity for the word amity? He says, the reason why I use amity for the exact same reason why you asked why. It encourages people to inquire about what this new tradition of addressing racism is all about. And so, and he also said that the what he wanted to do is to reinstitutionalize the first race amity celebration that was done in 1921. And that celebration was encouraged for blacks and whites to come together, to collaborate together, to work together, and it was encouraged by Abdu'l-Bahá. Abdu'l-Bahá was the son of the founder of the Baha'i faith, Baha'u'llah. And he encouraged the blacks and whites to come together, and they did have this celebration. And the incredible thing about it was that it was done in a very caustic climate. In Washington, D.C. at that time, there were many riots going on, and it was very dangerous to try to for blacks and whites to come together and without creating all kind of disturbance. But that conference went beautifully, and that is what Smitty, Dr. William Smith, is trying to reinstate, which he did under the 2011, the second Race Amity Day conference was held in the Boston area. And so the explanation of the word amity, as Ash was explaining, is about friendship. And you know, if we think about it, what is the closest relationship we have is family. And then the next closest relation is friendship, based on respect, commitment, and about sacrifice, and being able to collaborate and work with each other. Now, what happened was, when we went to the first CRAN, went to the first Race Amity Day celebration in 2013 in Boston, CRAN was asked to be ambassadors for the western part of Massachusetts. All through history, there has been collaboration between blacks and whites in order to bring forth meaningful changes in social changes in race relations. Many of them, such as Harriet Tubman, the Underground Railroad, and then there was also Tom Garrett. You probably don't know Tom Garrett because it hasn't been publicized much. But Tom Garrett, he was a landowner, a white landowner, and he housed over 2,700 slaves, runaway slaves. And this was a white man that was collaborating with the blacks. So collaboration, this was a whole important part that has been played throughout history, with the blacks and whites coming together and working together and solving many issues.
Ray Elliott grew up in Cambridge, and he's a chemist, and he was in the military. And I learned that when he was in the military, in uniform, he was treated in unspeakable ways. And Ray Elliott believes in amity, in peace among people who come from different backgrounds and are different colors. I think all of us would do very, very well if we tried to emulate Carol Ross and Ray Elliott. Thank you.
All right, so I'm all the way up.
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 There's no stopping us now.
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 When you, let me say, tell you, when you have friendship, when you have amity, when you have togetherness, we're all the way up.
And those were clips from Race Amity Day in Amherst on the second Sunday of June a couple weeks ago. Some of the speakers in those clips, Ash, I'm not sure his last name, was sort of emceeing it at the beginning. And then Ray Elliott was speaking about the history of Race Amity Day. And then Ellen Story talking about Ray Elliott. And then Shabazz Amilcar at the very end. Thanks for listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. This is WXOJ. LP 103.3 FM, also streaming online at valleyfreeradio.org. You can listen to archived editions of Out There at weatherbeer.com/out there. And here's something else that I wanted to share today. This is a computer situation. Okay, this is an article that came out in, well, I don't know in what, but an American Medical Association report says that LED lights, street lights, can put people and animals at risk. And I'm just going to read this. This article, okay, this is from this online publication, says Take Part, dated June 16th, 2016, written by John Platt. Let's see, I'll just read little part of it. Communities around the country are switching out their old roadside lighting for energy-efficient LED lights. If you haven't heard, Northampton is also in that process. And right now there are a couple of sample lights on Pleasant Street at the corner of, near the corner of Pleasant and Randolph. You can go take a look at them. If you have any thoughts about them, you can let Chris Mason know in City Hall, or in the, actually I think he's in Memorial Hall. He's the city's energy efficiency officer, and he's working on trying to figure out what the best design and what the best makes are for these new lights. And the city's actually pretty far along in their proposals already, but it's not too late to give your comments. Better now than after the lights are put up outside your window. Anyway, so according to the American Medical Association, a report from the AMA's Council on Science and Public Health found that LED lights that operate on bluer wavelengths, which appear white to the human eye, can create a disorienting glare for drivers. The bright lights can also disrupt natural circadian rhythms, during which, according to the report, melatonin blood concentrations rise, body temperature drops, sleepiness grows, and hunger abates, along with several other responses. The natural circadian rhythms, I think this sounds like that's what's supposed to happen. Yeah, you're supposed to get sleepy. Anyway, studies have shown that white LED streetlights are 5 times more powerful at suppressing circadian rhythms than the high-pressure sodium lights that they're replacing, the AMA noted. Studies have also found that residents in communities with more powerful nighttime lighting have higher cases of obesity and impaired daytime functioning. The lights also have an adverse effect on nocturnal wildlife. Scientists have found that migrating birds are attracted to unnatural lighting, which often results in injuries or death when they collide with reflections on buildings or other structures. High-intensity light pollution has also been linked to low survival rates for hatchling sea turtles and even to inhibited migration rates for salmon and other fish. So the article goes on to talk about some of the effects on wildlife, but the part that I was most interested in, which I hadn't read before, was about the effects on obesity and public health in that way. So Democracy Now! Will be coming up at 5 o'clock. Thanks for listening today. I'm going to close out with a song. This is Buffy St. Marie, Starwalker.